Welcome to the Tabletop Treehouse, our horticultural hideaway. I'm Chris.
I'm Dennis.
And I got that right, so there. Yay! I wasn't sure that I was going to say that right.
We like to give ourselves tongue twisters every once in a while.
Yeah, why not? What door should we open today? Probably the other one from last week, right?
Yes. It's kind of like that little greater than symbol, or prompt symbol, if you will.
The prompt symbol. That's got to be what it is.
Yes.
All right.
Let's take a dive.
We'll be right back.
You know, this is the game you run.
I know, my hands are covered in red. I'm the game master. I don't usually get to be on the other end of it. There's so much red. Okay, so as we do at the treehouse here, we start with a story that will lead into the topic. The story is about our Delta Green game.
Delta Green, if you're not familiar, is... What's the word I want here?
If you want the quick of it, it's you're a bunch of spies that work for the government dealing with cosmic threats.
Cosmic threats. Thank you. I wasn't sure what... I was about to say Cthulian, but it's not quite that.
Yeah, cosmic horror threats. It does use the Cthulhu mythos in a lot of cases, but it is definitely cosmic horror-y type threats.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, man, people are probably some of the most dangerous things that are actually out there.
Yeah. I mean, that's true in most stories.
Yeah, people
right?
do terrible things, especially in Delta Green. So, in this case... There was just a ritual sacrifice made by the PCs to cleanse the house that they were at of an evil presence. That's right. The player characters went and hunted down
a serial killer.
A serial killer, and then murdered them ritualistically to cleanse the house, because that was the only way they could do it.
No, a human trafficker.
Human trafficker.
Human
That's
trafficker.
Right. It wasn't a serial killer. Yeah. That's correct. It was still cold-blooded murder.
Yeah, I mean, the person's crime doesn't justify what we did.
That's true. And I realize that now after seeing what I just saw.
Yeah, it's
all fun and games until you're there.
Well, and you know, when you're playing the game and you're in those moments, there's this, you know, you get to these choices, these forks in the road where you don't really want to go down either path.
Nope.
But you can't just stand there, because otherwise you just get steamrolled.
Yeah.
And
you didn't have to do it. You all as a group chose to do that.
Well, yeah, we could have gone the other path, but based on our group's, you know, inclinations and morals, if we're going to call them that, you know, that was the path we decided to go down. We wanted to remove the influence on the house, and this was how we learned how to do it.
So after it happened, I went around the table and asked each player how their character felt about what they had just done. That prompted them to dive into their characters and how they felt and who they were and what this did to them mentally. Some of them were trying to justify it. Some of them were trying to help others by saying in a mantra-like way it had to be done, and was questioning whether they were saying it for the person or for themselves.
It had to be done. It had to be done.
It had to be done.
It had to be done.
It was really good, but it was also... heartbreaking in a lot of ways. And then, of course, the police siren started going off, because it was like 3 a.m, but the neighbors were nosy. And I rolled out in front of the table.
Mrs. McGillicuddy.
Yeah, I said, if I rolled under a 20, somebody would have noticed and called the cops, and I rolled a 17. So that burned all their FBI aliases.
Right, but we were mostly done at that point.
Yeah, you've been all been using some of the people have been using those aliases since the beginning of the game.
That's very true.
Those are just gone now.
Yeah.
And they're not exactly easy for the boss lady to bring back, but that's not the point. The point is about the prompt.
Right.
The prompt created this pretty intense role-playing moment from everybody at the table for that scene, and it was really intentional by me and really well played by the players.
Yeah, Chris gave us a really great opportunity to dive into our players' psyche, for you know, to put it in a way, and I think everyone at the table really shined at the moment, and it also gave everybody an opportunity to really shine in a very, like, even with it being a very tense and like
dark
scene, it was a very comfortable acting situation.
Yeah, I mean, that group of players is there to do that stuff.
Right, but like...
Everybody's bought into the game.
Right, yeah.
They're bought into my style, which is, I will ask those questions not infrequently.
Right.
It's not like every 5 minutes, but it's like, you know, once or twice a game it happens, and once or twice every 4 hours it happens.
As a table runner, like, it allows you to get a sense of where the table's at, maybe a little bit above as it bleeds into what their character's saying. But then, yeah, equally, it just gives the players an opportunity to say, hey, this is where I'm at. This is how my character's feeling. You know, I was pissed off, Sophie, when you, you know, said we had to turn left. That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we are talking about prompts. A prompt in an RPG is a question or an invitation from the GM or the game that asks the player to add meaningful material to play, such as a detail about the world, their character, a relationship, the current situation, the stakes, or what is going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot, but it's one of the most powerful tools in the game master's quiver for making things happen at the table.
It can take a lot of pressure off of you as a game master too, because it's, you know, putting the dice or putting the cards or however you want to, you know, however you want to say, in the player's hands. Like, here, this is your opportunity to come up with stuff. Have fun with it. Show me what you want to do.
Plus, I never want the game master to narrate at me.
Yeah, no.
What I'm thinking or feeling or anything like that. That's a big no-no. So,
yes.
I feel like there's only benefits to asking somebody how they feel or what they're thinking or what they're going to do or things like that.
You know, maybe if it's a mind-affecting situation, you'd be... Right, like there's situations for it. And if you're doing descriptive text, obviously you're narrating. But no, like you don't want to tell a player like, oh, you walk into this room and you see, you know, blood on the walls and suddenly you're on the floor crying.
Yeah.
And like, unless that's an effect that's some, you know, magical effect or something, you let them decide if they fall to the floor crying.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about those edge cases of like involuntary reactions that characters might have. It's like when they fail like a fright check or whatever in whatever game you happen to be
fright,
playing.
Fright, sanity, but even then, willpower.
Even then, I'm more interested in asking the player how their character reacts.
Yeah, like you might say to them, okay, you're terrified, how do you react?
Yeah,
and that's a very easy, quick prompt.
What does terrified look on you in this moment?
Yeah.
Delta Green does a pretty good job of asking those, letting the game master ask those questions to the character about their fight or flight response when certain sanity checks are failed.
Yeah, yeah. I think it does a great job, absolutely.
So we're going to talk about six types of prompts. I'm sure there's more, but it's kind of the ones that I mentioned in that opening. We're going to talk about situation, stakes, relationships, tone and genre, PC priorities, and action.
Yeah.
Situational prompts. What is happening right now? What is the first sign that a problem is worse than everyone thought?
Yeah, yeah, that's a great one.
Like, if you walk into a room and you see... I describe a bunch of bad stuff, like there's a body on the ground, it's bleeding, you're not sure if they're alive or not, you see that the door has been broken open, you can see light in the distance moving towards you. Then I ask you the question, what is the first sign that this problem or situation is worse than everyone thought?
The body starts moving?
Sure, right?
Like, yeah.
So now they're not even dead, they might still be alive, and either you have to save them, or they're undead, and it's even worse.
Right, yeah.
And the game master can make a choice at that point.
Yeah, it allows for that kind of interplay between players and GM to actively build the story in the moment kind of thing.
So the idea is that the prompt is about what is going on currently in the situation, how to let the players add to what's going on in the situation. And these are leading questions. If you're not familiar, those are questions that have a fairly narrow set of answers based on the fact that you funneled it in a specific direction.
You don't want to give your players necessarily a blank slate of, hey, what's going to happen next? Because then you'll be, you know, surfing in Hawaii or something. Your next one is stakes. This is essentially why something matters. You know, a prompt might end up being, what are you afraid will happen if you fail or lose your nerve?
Oh, it's from the Carve from Brindlewood games. It's one of my favorite prompts in all of existence. It was the thing that made me fall in love with the idea of the prompt.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of the day moves, I believe, right?
The day move asked this question.
Yeah.
Some other versions of the game asked this question in different ways. The night move is something different, but this one, what happens if you fail or lose your nerve? And then the player asks, and the reason I like it so much is because I'm not telling you what you're afraid of. You're going to tell me what you're afraid of.
Right. And you're going to tell me what it looks like when you, you know, can't face up to that fear, or when you fail in the face of that kind of,
Yep. The next one is relationships. So this is about creating connections between characters, NPCs, factions, and different places. Here's a prompt. What happened between you and McKinney during the war, which led you to owing him a favor?
Yeah, so it allows you to maybe explore backstory that either you as a character might already have established and the table might not be aware of, or just on the spot, like, oh, cool, I get to be connected to this guy that we just met.
Yep.
cool. I'm way more like I'm in the world now, yep. You know?
So you can drop it like in the middle of a scene when somebody shows up and you need to have an instant connection to a player character.
Yeah.
You can just drop that out there. From our last week and a previous Rapscallion episode, the questions that characters ask that create bonds between each other. This is one of those questions.
This is kind of, carbon copy right there. Yeah.
A lot of there's a lot of questions from the character creation in Rapscallion. Those four questions that each character gets that do some relationship work.
Well, yeah. And I would say they're prompt based, but just not in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, prompts don't have to be in the moment. Prompts are just the type of thing. They can happen in session zero. They can happen after the game is over.
Right.
But they are very useful in play.
Yeah. Next up, we've got tone and genre. This can help you steer the feel of the game. An example might be, how long do you go into a stasis for? This is referring to a game,
Skeletons?
By Jason Morningstar. So essentially, you're guarding a tomb. Your skeleton's guarding this tomb, and you get a choice for... how long do you go into stasis for until you're next awoken by grave robbers or some environmental thing or whatever else?
People that are invading your tomb.
Yes. So anywhere from a few days, a month, a year, a decade, a millennium.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, somewhat ties into mechanics of the game where you'll essentially then sit in the dark for anywhere, I think, from like 1 second to 2 minutes is the max.
I think 10 was the max.
10 was the max?
Damn. Yeah, we never sat for 10.
Yeah, I don't think we did the millennium. Yeah, I know we did 5. And yeah, it's very cool. It, you know, everyone's supposed to be quiet. Well, and then to get into that just a little bit, because it's really cool. At one point, one of the prompts on my sheet, essentially one of the questions I got to answer at one point was, it led to me breaking the curse of being in stasis.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize it at first. And then when I did, it led to this really cool rant that I timed perfectly to end when the lights turned back on. And it was a very fun table moment. And I was very proud of myself.
He was allowed to talk during the darkness. None of the rest of us could.
Yeah. And so everyone else was just kind of going stir crazy, listening to my voice, being like, wait, am I supposed to be here? Is it?
Yeah.
What? I was having a very existential crisis that I climaxed right as the lights turned back on.
And what that does is it reinforces the idea that we are skeletons.
Yes.
That are magically bound and guarding this tomb.
Yeah.
Eventually people will show up, but we got to choose how long it was going to be. And then, like you said, there's a mechanic that goes along with that. So that prompt provided a time for meditation or, you know, ridiculousness and then helped to make us feel like we were sitting in the darkest skeletons. That was the purpose of it. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. Very cool game. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah. I think the what are you afraid will happen if you fail or lose your nerve is also a pretty good tone and genre setter.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are investigative horror investigation games, and just asking a question like, what are you afraid will happen if you fail or lose your nerve is a good way to help reinforce the genre of being in an investigative horror game.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll be back after a word from our fantasy ad sponsor.
Did you burn up the last of your thistlewort in your crucible? Blink Dog Couriers can get it to you now before your potion turns sour. Is your nemesis camped out on your lawn? Our Blink Dogs can get you what you need to get you on your feet and back in the fight. Blink Dog Courier Service. We might be expensive, but we'll be there in the blink of an eye. Blink Dog Couriers. We're already outside your house.
PC priorities. What the PCs care about or how they feel in the moment. How do you feel having done what you've just done? We just talked about it. This is based on the story.
Yeah.
Some of these crossover, like the Venn diagram overlaps.
Yeah, I mean, there might be, like, you could maybe winnow these all down to like two or three categories if you wanted to get really broad, but
it is, that question fits inside like three buckets.
Oh, no, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, those Venn diagrams just overlap. Is where I'm getting at. Like, we have prompts, and then we have these different kind of prompts, and some of these prompts just sit on top of each other in certain ways.
Yeah, you can use them in different aspects, different intentions.
But that like lets the game master and the players at the table understand what everybody else's priorities are for their character. When they answer those questions like that, it's really pretty fascinating to like get inside of the character at the table, and then everybody gets to see it. It's almost like a flashback scene or an internal monologue sequence that everybody is then privy to so that they can help in the future play off that better.
I think it just really allows for a lot of really cool player moments.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, it's a great tool.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I did talk about like the benefit of it, but there it's also just a lot of there's a lot of enjoyment there. If you like to get into character play, like that's a good way to get into character play.
Well, I think if you're not used to that sort of thing, if maybe you play a maybe more surface level game where it's a little bit more about the crunch and the numbers and the damage and the XP, and you want to get more into role play. Prompts are a great way to do that. It's baby steps, you know?
Yeah, I mean, a prompt, there was the situation when what's happening right now. A great prompt for that is in a D&D game when somebody makes an attack roll. After they make the attack roll and they hit you, like, what does it look like when you fight?
Yeah.
So then we can understand what your fighting style looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can then have a shared vision of that at the table, which is really useful.
What does your magic look like, you mm-hmm. know? How do you commune with your god? That sort of stuff.
Yeah, when I talk about buckets, man, that is situation, what's happening right now. It is tone and genre, because it then reinforces this kind of fantasy, we're fighters and wizards, and we have actual fighting styles, and like our magic looks a certain way.
Yeah.
It might even go with along with PC priorities. Like, if your fighting style is always to be non-lethal.
Yeah.
Or your magic has a certain look to it. For reasons, like it always has the tinges or the images of your dead family members associated with it. It means that you have some certain things about your character that matter to you.
Yeah, yeah. The laughing echo of some forgotten god every time you cast a spell.
There you go.
Last one we're going to bring up here, as far as, you know, kind of prompts to use, is an action prompt. You can save the informant or catch the killer. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of giving that, like I was talking earlier, kind of that fork in the road choice of where do you want the story to go?
And this is probably mostly used not before a die roll or things like that. This is used as a consequence of a die roll.
Right.
Or this, your randomizer.
Yeah, like maybe this is a success with a complication or a complete failure. You as the GM are then giving this prompt to still give some kind of ownership and authority to the players.
For instance, do you want to get bit or save Colin from getting bit on the arm? See an early episode about Dennis's character Slippery Jim getting zombie bit on the arm.
Yeah, but now he's got a mechanical arm, which his new friend is very interested in.
Very interested in. But yeah, that's another example of an action prompt. Those are the six kind of prompts. Let's see if there's more to dig into here. So how do we think that prompts enhance gameplay? I think it gives players a sense of ownership of the world.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's letting you have influence and say in the world building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's another one?
Allows you to reveal background stories, histories, or inner feelings that, you know, you might not immediately show if the prompt wasn't available.
Yeah. I agree. It could give other players and the GM deeper insights to character. I mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that makes it easier for people to play off of each other. Plus, like you said, those prompts give like really fun, enjoyable character moments that people talk about for a long time.
Exactly.
So how do you think they could potentially detract from the game?
It's going to be a bit more case by case, I suppose, depending on how, you know, you utilize them and the players at your table. And if you have a more reserved player,
mm-hmm.
they could perhaps feel a bit put upon or even left out if they're not as willing to engage with the prompts.
That is true. Yeah. There are some people that are just not there for that kind of play.
Yeah.
They're more interested in the numbers and the crunch and moving folks on a map and the mechanical in their own personal minds of killing monsters.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You should
numbers going up is very cool.
Yeah, you should be aware of that for those players so that you're not trying to bombard them. But that doesn't mean you can't necessarily not bring them out of their shell at times with some of these, especially the less higher stake prompts.
Yeah, yeah. If you use, you know, the more kind of in the moment ones, where like, yeah, tell me how the easy prompts are like, how do you kill this guy? And, you know, that lets a player have a little moment of shine as they describe, oh, I decapitate him and, you know, stand on his corpse and shout to the heaven, you know, however they want to describe it. And I think even a reserved player can find fun in those moments as well.
Mm-hmm. I think the prompts to avoid are the ones, at least in most cases, that pigeonhole players too much.
Right.
You don't want there to only be one right answer to the prompt. You can make it a hard choice, especially if it comes after a failed roll.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But almost like they say, if if you don't want the check to fail, don't make them roll. Also, don't give a prompt if you only want one answer. Just figure out how to make the story go that way.
Yeah, I mean, preferably don't do that and just...
Let the story develop, yeah.
If we're going to talk about, like, adventure design and like, game mastering focus and, like, how to at least get players on the track that you want, because I like... There's nothing wrong with linear adventure design. I've written plenty of linear adventures. Linear adventures are not railroads. Railroads are where you have no agency.
Right.
Linear adventure design is like, there's an endpoint, and we need to get to that endpoint.
And like, there's X, Y, and Z in the middle, and we'll figure out which we go to.
Yeah. It's like what my buddy Doc Palindrome from Scritches. If you haven't listened to Scritches, go listen to Scritches. He runs for Young Dragon Slayers, and he had kids on a train. And the kids at the end of the game, because he runs for kids, that's what Young Dragon Slayers is. It's basically summer camp for kids, or summer camp for D&D for kids, or things
like
that.
That's cool. Is it local?
No, he runs most of these games online. It's a pretty cool website. Check it out, everybody.
Yeah.
If you want your kids to play some D&D, there's a lot of great people there. When they were done, they're like, we got railroaded. And Doc's like, you guys could have climbed down the top of the train. You could have disconnected cars. You could have done all this. And the kids are like, oh.
I didn't know I could think outside the box.
Just because it feels like there's a straight path doesn't mean it's a railroad. It just means you have to find those interesting angles and the choices that you can make on it. That's my rant about linear versus railroading, what those two things actually are.
We'll probably end a whole episode on that at some point.
Yeah, we will. it will be that discussion expanded to like 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, we'll talk about more aspects of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Prompt should have the choice. Like, it should balloon out before it narrows back down.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a ton of choices, but there has to be some amount of choice, real choice. And real choices... the one that's not obvious. Like, and by obvious, I mean, like, every other choice is going to be bad.
Right. Like, do you walk off the building or do you sit down?
Yeah, right. Can I just go inside? Do I get a parachute?
Yeah, right.
Can I just, like, jump off and hold on to the edge? And then just drop down from floor to floor? I'm sorry. Okay.
What do I do?
Yeah, what makes a good prompt? I think what makes a good prompt is making it a leading question, or statement that has narrative boundaries, but not so focused that it doesn't give you choices.
Yeah, yeah. Open-ended within the world you're currently, you know, viewing. Whatever that scene or, you know, event might be, keep it within those bounds, but keep it open-ended.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really all I have to say about this subject. Do you have anything else?
I think that's all we've got on prompts. Use them. They're a lot of fun. It's a great way to get your table, you know, more into role-playing and kind of open those doors and unlock those character secrets.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, everybody, thank you so much for being here with us in the treehouse today. You should join our Discord if you want to talk to us more. We'd be happy to. Nobody's in there yet. Please come join the Discord. It's free. Like, you can just hang out. We'll talk to you about role-playing games.
Yeah, if you got any questions, feel free to drop a line. I was just reading some stuff on Fiasco this week. I'd be happy to talk about that.
Oh, there you go. I have so many problems with that game. I'd love to talk to you about it.
I was just reading the book for the first time. I was like, oh, there's cool stuff in here.
There's some cool stuff in there. You can join our Patreon. If you just want to, you can join it for free. You can get all the podcast episodes there if you prefer to get them that way. Of course, you can get them on your podcatchers. You can also get them on YouTube.
YouTube's good.
Please go to YouTube. Check out the shorts if you don't really want to watch the show. The shorts get a bunch of stuff out of there that are pretty fun, too. That's patreon.com/tabletoptreehouse. You can also, if you join our Patreon, get the PDF of our magic item and our Game Talk episodes, which, you know, we're going to record one of those in about 2 seconds. The PDFs of our magic items this week's is...
Blinked Dog Curios.
Yeah, that's right. And Rico will be on there, and he'll talk about our very lovely, very cute Blink Dog. You want some merch? You can go to our Redbubble store. We'll have plenty of merch there from different things like this shirt. I'm sure we'll have Rico on a sticker at some point.
Oh, yeah, we got to.
Mm-hmm. So if you want Good Boy Rico, the Blink Dog delivery dog, you can get him. And
I'd love to see a Rico sticker in the wild. That'd be crazy.
That'd be wild, right?